Tohono Lake was off the beaten track as far as lakes went in New Jersey. There were no lakeside homes. It was on private land owned by the Cerberus Corporation for the use of its top management. The man who sat in the rowboat in the center of the lake, holding a fishing reel, was slightly under 6 feet and reasonably trim for a man of 60. He had reddish-brown hair topping a tanned face. Everything about him seemed exactingly sculptured in marble by an ancient Greek. The eyes were almost as blue-white as those on a husky. Curtis Merlin Zale was a perfectionist. There was nothing left of the boy who used to hike across cornfields to complete his chores. By the time he was 38, he was America's 9th richest man with a net worth in the billions. He then bought an oil company low in profits but high in leases around the country and Alaska. 10 years later, he combined it with an old solid chemical company. Eventually, he merged his holdings into one giant conglomerate called Cerberus. No one really knew Zale. He made no friends, never attended parties or social functions, never married. His love was power. He bought and sold politicians as if they were pedigreed dogs. He was ruthless, tough and cold as the Ice Age. No opponents in his business transactions ever met with success. Most ended up defeated and broken, the victim of dirty, treacherous fights that went far beyond ethical business procedures. Zale fixed his blue-white eyes on his chief security officer, James Wong, who was clumsily trying to untangle the line on his reel. "I find it most peculiar that 3 vital projects, planned with such meticulous forethought and computerized analysis, should have failed."
"Events happened beyond our control," Wong said. "The Emerald Dolphin came apart when those Numa scientists unexpectedly appeared and then managed to dive down and survey her. Then, when we hijacked the survey crew, they managed to escape. And now, according to my intelligence sources, Numa personnel were instrumental in saving the Golden Marlin. It's as if they appear like the plague."
"I do not endure mistakes lightly," said Zale tonelessly. "Chance occurrences are due to poor planning, blunders to incompetence."
"No one regrets failure more than I," said Wong.
"I find that foolish stunt by Omo Kanai in New York especially disturbing. I still can't understand why he cost us an expensive antique aircraft while attempting to shoot down a plane full of children."
"Who authorized the incident?" "He did it on his own after running into Pitt, and then, of course, Kelly Egan was on board."
"Why kill her?"
"She could recognize Kanai."
"I would have handled it differently," Zale said, with an icy edge in his voice.
"The results are what count," Wong argued. "And now Kanai has made up for his rash venture by abducting Kelly Egan from the Golden Marlin after he arranged its sinking. He is flying her to her father's house in New Jersey."
"Where I suppose he intends to torture her in front of Thomas, to prod him into producing the oil formula."
"Not exactly an ingenious plan, but one that will produce a harvest of information."
Zale sat silent for a moment. "There can be no more failures. Perhaps I should get someone who can direct Viper operations without complications."
A warning light flashed in the back of Wong's mind.
"You are suggesting that I am no longer useful as the chief of Viper?"
"I think that others may be able to conduct future enterprises to more productive conclusions."
In a lightning move, Zale had snatched a syringe from his tackle box, plunged the needle in Wong's neck, and pushed the plunger. The poison acted almost instantly. Wong fell back in the boat, his eyes wide with shock as his body went limp.